You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with an hour of food and drink. Many thanks to Ian Dayborn for taking us through the last 2 hours. I'm Alan Alder and co-presenters Matt Bentman and Ruth Reyes are away this week on their summer break. However, I'm not alone here in the Cambridge 105 studio. Toby Miller from our excellent film programme Bums on Seats is here on the controls. And are you much of a foodie, Toby?
I bake. I spent bank holiday baking biscuits, bread. Good biscuits, bad bread, though.
Yeah, bread's tricky. I have trouble with bread.
Well,
yeah.
I had more talent than I showed on Monday. I don't know. Fingers have stopped working.
Right. OK, well, let's start with what's on today's programme. We've got Alex Collis and Zoe Loughlin talking about the Whoop Soup initiative. And if you don't know what Whoop is, you soon will. Pina Broccoli Anaya discovers a source of truffles in Cambridge. That's the usually terribly expensive fungus, not the chocolates. Ruth Reyes continues her exploration of hot food at the market by speaking to the chap who does baked potatoes and bagels from a red truck. And I'll be talking to Nazima Pathan about the Cambridge Food Collective, which begins its activities next week, and to James McFarlane from the Three Horseshoes in Maddingley, which has just gone through a change of ownership. Dave Fox will be giving his monthly tips about growing your own fruit and vegetables as well. And at the end, we'll have a roundup of Cambridge's food and drink news. But let's begin with a food that's not easily obtainable, truffles. There was a fruit and vegetable stall on the market that sold black truffles, but it closed down 3 or 4 years ago. However, truffle lovers need not despair. Here's Pina Broccoli Anaya visiting a new Italian importer based in Cambridge who specialises in truffles.
I'm speaking to Will Bailey of Truffle Face, a new Cambridge company supplying high-quality, affordable truffles from Italy.
That's right, the diamond of the kitchen, somebody once said. The ones we're selling right now, black summer truffles, absolutely beautiful, quite delicate flavour. And then as we move on through the year, we'll be picking up the autumn truffle, which is slightly stronger, slightly more pricey. And then around Christmas time, you get the white ones, so you get a white Christmas, and they're the ones that everybody absolutely raves about.
And do you only do truffles from Italy, a certain region?
Or? Yeah, that's right. So we're based in Orvieto, which is a small village in Umbria. We're based there, but we spend maybe 6 months a year putting together a network of truffle hunters all over Italy so that if the weather conditions were bad in Orvieto, we'd still be able to supply people.
Oh, fantastic. And how are the truffles collected?
Well, a lot of people think they use pigs, but actually they got a tendency to eat the truffles when they find them, so yeah. Now they use well-trained dogs instead.
How are they served? I know a lot of restaurants use them, but I suppose people can buy them and
yeah, for sure. We sell to a lot of just individuals and anybody who's interested in food. Just, you know, most people think about truffles as kind of like the, like I said, the diamond of the kitchen.
Yeah, and so, yeah. I know you have some recipes on your website.
Yeah, we've got one which I just let you try, which was the grilled cheese. How did you think it was?
It was fantastic. Yeah,
awesome.
Really,
so,
very generous with the truffles, which you might not usually get if you're going out. So when you buy it yourself,
yeah, exactly.
You can do as much as you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
very nice earthy flavor with the cheese and
it's pretty delicious.
Cheese. Yeah, it was really good. I got lunch today, so this is a bonus. So how did you come up with setting up a truffle business?
So I lived in Italy for a couple of years. My wife and I, we just watched way too much A Home in the Sun, I think the show was called. And so we just got the idea in our heads that we could go and renovate a place in Italy.
Oh, fantastic.
So instead of buying a round-the-world ticket, we put a deposit down on a little shack kind of place in Italy and spent a couple of years doing it up. So while I was over there, I made some really good friends.
Now, were you in a truffle area?
We were just in Tuscany. North of Umbria, in Tuscany. And, and really good porcini there too. But so, in that kind of area, you're just eating amazing food all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you're going up and getting gorgonzola,
right,
truffles.
Exactly. Everything's just delicious. After a couple of years living there, I made some really good friends out there. And I think it was a couple of years ago, I went back over and ate truffles again, and I said, this is something I want to do. I want to promote this in the UK, because it's not really a big thing over here in the same way as in Italy. You know, in Italy, everyone eats truffles.
Yeah, you'll just have it at home, and it'll be something you just buy
exactly.
very freely.
And in England, it's something that's, for some reason, is just in kind of Michelin-star restaurants.
I mean, yeah, because it is more expensive, but there is definitely a segment of the foodie population that would be interested in buying that for themselves without having to travel to France.
Exactly. And what I realised was that one of my friends over there has quite a substantial amount of land, his family does, in Orvieto. And so we went there and I said to him, did you ever look for truffles? And he said no. So we rented a dog for the day, a truffle hound, and we stumbled across truffle oil.
Oh, wow.
And so, he said, let's try and put something together. So that was how it all began.
And so are the truffles white truffles or black truffles?
Right now we're selling black truffles. So they're seasonal. So,
oh, okay. I didn't know
so
that.
The black summer ones are from end of April through to September. And then you go on to the autumn ones, which are sort of September, October time through to November, December. And then you get the prized white ones.
Oh, fantastic. And so the name, Truffle Face. And those who've seen your social media, you mean you basically have people holding up a truffle.
Right, in front of their face.
As a truffle face.
Why the name? I think when I looked at the other truffle brands in the UK, and there's not a huge number of them, but every single one was like luxury truffles or inaccessible to somebody like me who just loves food but doesn't really want to, you know, wear a suit every time I have dinner.
So kind of very serious and pretentious.
Exactly.
With the truffle,
so I wanted a brand that just, you know, shouted, a bit more accessibility, I think.
Mm. So who are your customers in Cambridge right now?
So the first thing we did when we set up the business was just go and knock on the door of some restaurants that already had the truffles on the menu. First three, I think, were the Three Horseshoes out in Madingley. Fantastic restaurant, you know it?
Mm-hmm.
Delicious. And then we got Restaurant 22 on Chesterton Road.
Yeah.
Again, another fantastic little restaurant. Cotto. And so in the first 3 weeks, we'd got those three buying from us, so we were pretty happy and knew that we had something that was obviously good quality, because if the guys in those places are buying it, then we did. So then we started going to farm shops. So we're selling from Burwash Larder, Radmore Farm Shop. We're also selling from Cambridge Farmers Outlet. And also Limoncello have taken a few from us.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So it's going to be a truffle revolution.
I'm hoping so. I think our strapline is going to be truffles for everybody.
Fantastic, fantastic. And you do kind of say that they're more affordable, the way I guess you make affordable.
Sure, because we're getting them from my colleague in Italy's land, we can afford to sell them a bit cheaper than our competitors. In fact, I think most of our competitors sell them about 30% more than we do.
Oh, fantastic. And the ones who can't make it to the shops, where can they buy it?
They can buy direct from our website, which is truffleface.co.uk.
Okay, you can just choose the truffles, I think, by weight.
That's right, you can choose from anywhere from 20 grams up to 250, and then if you were a restaurateur and wanted a wholesale thing, then there's just a form to fill in. You can pick up kilos at a time if you like.
But you have other products too. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Sure, we've got some really nice oils, some truffle oils. We've got black and white, and we've also got a really delicious creamy cheese called carciotta al tartufo, they call it in Italy, so truffle cheese, essentially.
It looks so good.
It's absolutely delicious. And then we've also got something, we wanted to come out with something that was a bit unique and hopefully get some bloggers writing about us, so we came up with this idea to do the most ridiculously decadent thing we could think of, which was to gold plate a truffle. So we got this 24 carat edible gold, and then we coat it around a truffle, and just think that could be an amazing centrepiece for dinner parties or for a truffle lover.
I saw that, the gilded truffle.
Right, exactly. The
60
gilded
pounds,
truffle.
It's a lovely... Something quite unique.
It's a special thing. I think not all of our customers are going to be buying it, but I think, for a special occasion, why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, like you said, you can't totally discount the fact that it's a luxury item.
Exactly.
But you can also make it accessible for people and somebody looking for something different.
For sure.
And you've got tagliatelle as well, so pasta.
That's with truffle baked right into it. So there's this artisanal pasta maker just down the road from my colleague's property, and they make this stuff, and it is just
amazing. Oh, well, we need to try that.
For sure.
And then there's a salsa as well?
That's right, a white truffle salsa.
Is it a dip or a condiment?
You can use it as a spread on toast, or you can stir it into pasta. It's really versatile. In fact, I put it on a steak the other day, and it was just delicious. So these are the products we've got right now, but my brother-in-law's a head chef, in fact, and he's been working on some other stuff for us, which is really interesting. I gave some samples out last week of our own truffle paste, and it went down really well, so I'm hoping to bring more products on soon.
That's fantastic. We have a whole kind of new foodie community developing within what we have already. Mm-hmm. Cambridge is such a great place for foodies in general.
Absolutely.
And new food businesses.
It's about to get better with the Cambridge Food Collective, so we're going to be selling through those guys too.
I can't wait. I think they're launching in September, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely keep an eye on that so people can just order a whole bunch of other local products and include you in there and get their truffle fix.
Yeah, for sure.
Fantastic. That's really good. More information on Truffle Face can be found on their website, truffleface.co.uk, including products and recipes. Find them on social media too, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Truffle Face UK. Thank you for your time, Will.
Thank you very much for having me.
Some marvellous ideas there. And any listeners to Flavour who are interested in giving some of Will Bailey's truffles a try, he's been kind enough to grant us a discount code, which you can use with your first order online at his website. Simply quote 105 with your order to receive a generous discount, and the name of the company is Truffle Face. And Will mentioned the Cambridge Food Collective there as one of the places to buy his truffles. More about that in a few minutes. But before then, regular listeners will know that Flavour presenter Ruth Reyes is gradually eating her way round the market stalls of Cambridge. And today she goes to the little red trailer that's parked outside the Guildhall and talks with Lee. You can find him inside the trailer, about potatoes and bagels.
Right, I'm here with Lee of the Potato and Bagel Bar, just off the market, and you're here about 6 days a week?
6 days a week, yeah, Monday to Saturday, every week.
So where do you get your bagels?
We get them from Brick Lane in the east end of London.
So how did you decide to get those bagels?
Well, it's the owner, actually. He loves his bagels, and he's been down there quite a lot and had a bagel, so he thought, right, we'll bring some up here and try them, and they've just taken off.
Brilliant. So how long has the stall been on the market?
It's actually been here 28 years.
So is it always in the same spot 28 years?
It's always been on the same spot for 28 years, yeah.
For the potatoes, where do the potatoes come from?
Well, the story is the owner, again, used to work in London, and often he had his lunch on Covent Garden, which had a potato stall, and which is still there. And he thought, I could do that. So he came to Cambridge, started one up, and it's been here for 28 years later.
How do you keep the potatoes nice and fluffy?
That depends on the potato itself. They take about an hour and 3/4, 2 hours to cook. But depending on the potato, depends how fluffy they are.
Do you cook them in the van itself?
In the stall here?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we cook them. We arrive in the morning, put them on about 9:15, 9 o'clock, and they're ready for 11 o'clock. And then we keep, as we sell them, we keep putting more in the oven to cook.
So what kind of different toppings and things do you have?
Well, we've got a range of things, really. We've got chilli, curry, baked beans, ratatouille, cottage cheese, mature cheese, quite a few.
What's a favourite that people get normally?
The most popular is cheese and baked beans. That is the most popular potato we do.
Where do you get the potatoes?
We buy them locally in Cambridge, but they're actually from Spalding.
Would you rather have a bagel or a potato on a normal day?
I'd sooner have a potato. I love the bagels, but the potatoes I find are more filling.
Especially in the winter.
Especially in the winter, yeah.
How do you find it being on the market?
Oh, I love it. I love it. As I say, I've been here 10 years, and every day is different. You get different people, you get to see different people. You get to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you very much.
And that was Lee from the red truck by the Guildhall talking to Ruth Reyes. And really interesting that he gets his bagels from Brick Lane in London, where there are two 24-hour bagel shops almost next door to each other, very good and amazingly cheap. But the best place to buy your own bagels in Cambridge that I found anyway is the Derby Stores in Newnham. And they drive to London to get them every Thursday morning, not to Brick Lane, but to the Carmelli Bakery in Golders Green. And they get back to the shop in Newnham by about 10:30 with six varieties of bagel. And they usually sell out in a few hours.
Community radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
We've mentioned before the difficulty people have in getting food from independent producers here in Cambridge, because there's no one place to go to for them. You have to do a lot of travelling about. The recently restarted Cambridge Food Assembly is a good answer to this. Order online and collect from the tramshed in Dover Street on a Wednesday. We've also been bringing you news of another venture called the Cambridgeshire Food Collective, and we're pleased to say that it's launching this coming week. Again, there's a website and you order online from it. And one of the people behind it is Nazima Pathan of Frongley Kitchen and a regular contributor to Flavour. I asked her for an update. Nazima, the Cambridge Food Collective is launching very soon.
The website itself will be on public view from Monday. We open for orders on the 8th and the first orders will be delivered on the 13th, the following Thursday. So the way it works is that it's a Tuesday to Thursday turnaround time. We need a couple of a sort of day and a half that we allow our suppliers to get their products ready, because a lot of these are artisans making food from scratch. These are made to order items. Given that much time to allow the stock to be as fresh as possible, then it comes into our warehouse on Thursday morning, and then people can either come to the warehouse to pick up, which is in Clifton Road, or we can deliver to their home within the central Cambridge region of CB1 to CB5.
Tell us what sort of foods, what categories of foods you've got.
Yeah, so we've tried to make it as broad as possible. So we've got fruit and veg, and as much as we can, we keep it seasonal, but there are certain things that people like to use and eat. Avocados, tomatoes, they'll always be available. But as much as possible, we're going to be having seasonal things. I know, for example, my fruit and veg supplier is going to be supplying quinces, which will be really nice in September. It's going to be an exciting array of things, very high quality. Dairy, from butter, milk, cream, yogurts produced in Suffolk, and ice cream, of course, from Jack Scalato. And he will be doing his usual sort of rotating schedule of seasonal flavours in 500ml tubs for us to deliver to you. In terms of meat, we've got two suppliers at the moment. So we've got Mill Road Butchers in the centre of Cambridge, who's doing the vast majority of our stuff, from pork, bacon, beef, some beef, poultry, sausages, as well as Cam Cattle, who's going to be supplying a lot of beef cuts as well as some lamb. Then we've got a bakery. So we've got Cobb's Bakery doing the bread. We've got Corinne, who's got her patisserie. We have Alison Lucis, who does Ali's Baltic Bakes, selling Puragi. We've got a very, very good allergen-free supplier of bread and cakes called Incredible Bakery. So they're going to be doing some products for us.
Where are they based?
They're based in Cambridgeshire as well. That's that. And then from the pantry side of things, we've got coffee from Hot Numbers Coffee, granola and flour from Friars Farm Flour, Cambridgeshire honey, pastas and sauces, cheese from the Cambridge Cheese Company, and then in terms of drink, we've got beers, spirits and wine from Noel Young's wine shop.
Right, so although the products themselves, like the wine, largely won't be English, nevertheless they're being provided by a local provider.
That's correct.
Provider.
So our ethos is that where we can, we source locally. However, we decided to be pragmatic, looking at what most people, including ourselves, while wanting to eat seasonally and locally, will also need to, particularly in the depth of winter, need to eat products that do come from further afield. And so we are including items that aren't. People obviously can shop how they please, and we will be trying to keep a sort of a store aisle on the site easy to navigate to, products that are organic, products that are locally produced or free from or gluten-free, so that people with specific interests can search for that. But in the meantime, the main thing to think is that what we're doing is sourcing from independent, high-quality suppliers of food and drink in Cambridgeshire.
And have you been able to do any sort of assessment of quality yourself?
Yes, we've developed a relationship with all of our suppliers, and where we haven't tried them, we've asked others who have, and I have personally sort of photographed a lot of the products, so I've handled it and tasted it. And obviously, a lot of people who know about the food scene in Cambridge will recognise the names. So, for example, from the meat side, although we're using Mill Road Butcher, he's stocking some excellent meat. So some have got chicken. One of the chickens we've got is Sutton Hoo chicken, produced in Suffolk, very high quality, very strong reputation amongst chefs as well as foodies, and supply right down through to big butchers in London. So they have a very broad distribution area and a well-established farm. Our eggs come from Havensfield Farm, which is in Suffolk and has a very nice reputation as well of a local producer of free-range eggs. Whilst I don't know them all personally, they have a good reputation, and we have also had them all agree to our terms and conditions, which one of which is that, you know, they have a good working ethic and treat their employees fairly and you know, pay a fair price where they source product. And I'm satisfied that these are good companies. Obviously, you know, we're always looking for more. The more we can put on there, for the seller it's advantageous because it's a supply to order, and for the buyer it's great because it means everything is freshly produced.
Mm. So people will look at the website, they'll yes. click on what they want,
yeah.
like a supermarket yes. site, website,
yes.
and then they fill their basket, they pay online.
Yes.
And then where do they collect it from, or is there a delivery? Or
yep,
what?
So both can happen. The website allows orders and then slots you into the next available Thursday delivery. The advantage of this is it's like being able to buy from all these shops, but without having to drive around. So you could buy from Noel Young in Trumpington, Cambridge Cheese Company, and yet you do not have to travel and waste the time and energy of going around Cambridge. So this food will be packaged for you in one bag, or in one basket box, and then this can either be delivered to your home if you live in CB1 to CB5, and if we can't deliver to you, or if you wish, you can pick it up. And the hub is at Indus Kitchens warehouse location, which is in Clifton Road, which is right next to where sort of the junction is, and it's an easily accessible site with you can park and pick up and go, so it's not
and that's a Thursday as well.
It's
is
on
it?
A Thursday.
And what sort of times can
so
you go?
So people would be able to pick up from about 2:33 till 6 or 7. Our delivery will operate from 3 till 10 p.m. to go to people's houses. Mm.
So has there been a lot of interest? It sounds like a very, very ambitious project.
It is an ambitious project.
You must be worn out.
There's a lot of products to upload. So you've got about 500 products on there. My ambition is to create something that feels like a supermarket with enough variety that people then don't have to go and do much other shopping elsewhere. Mm. It's the only way it'll be successful, is having a lot of choice for people. And then to try and increase the frequency of our delivery options, because people in this day and age that don't want to be able to have to plan ahead, and that's the only thing. But we say, you know, you're getting the advantage of buying, you know, very, very fresh produce. If you can have the patience, you will be rewarded by a really amazing basket of food.
Tremendous. And has there been a lot of interest?
We have had a lot of interest. We've had a very good response on social media and on our... We've been sharing some of the photographs of our suppliers' food and drink. And we have, you know, built quite an extensive mailing list. So what we're offering is that anyone who signs up to our mailing list before the 8th of September when we launch will get a 5% discount on their first order. It's been... It appears to be successful, but you never know. For us, you know, and for our suppliers, the risk is that people will or will not be willing to plan ahead. But if not, it's not a physical bricks and mortar shop. It's a site, and hopefully people will see that it's worth ordering through, because you really don't get access to all of these suppliers in one place.
Yeah, that's
anywhere
a great
else.
Advantage, isn't it? Yeah, and they're all local. And the website has got details of all the products and that you can order from the website. Is there anything else on the website that people would be interested in?
We'll be putting recipes on for seasonal foods as well as for events that we're going to be running. So we're planning to run a sort of Christmas event for our customers, where hopefully a little mini market and a seasonal products from our suppliers. Then apart from that, yeah, we're just possibly doing some videos with Simply Good Food TV and putting those on the site. Trying to create a community and trying to show ways of creatively cooking seasonal food without too much effort.
Are you still looking for suppliers, or have you got enough now?
No, we're always happy to talk to suppliers. We have a good range of products, but the more we put on this, as with any supermarket, there's no reason not to have duplicate products. So We are talking to another bakery as well who might want to put some bread on, and I don't see there's a problem with it, but we're happy to talk to anybody and then take the conversation further with them.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Lizzie.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
And before then, Nazima Pathan from the Cambridge Food Collective, whose website opens on Monday and ordering starts on Thursday. If you want a delivery, it's free for orders of over £60, and for smaller orders, there's a £3 charge. And it sounds really exciting to me. And the fact that the baking is done to order is a good idea. Good fresh food with no waste. But now on to restaurants. A popular restaurant on the edge of Cambridge, in Madingley in fact, is the Three Horseshoes, and it's just been bought by the Huntsbridge Company, who actually owned it in the past a few years ago. And they also run the Old Bridge in Huntingdon, and that's a place with a very good reputation for food, but it also has an outstanding wine list, because one of the owners of Huntsbridge, John Hoskins, is a master of wine. And I popped into the Three Horseshoes earlier in the week to get some idea of how it will develop under its new ownership by looking at its menu for August with house manager James McFarlane. James, under the new ownership of the Three Horseshoes, is there going to be any change or in the style of food? What's the style of food going to be?
So before we predominantly focused on Italian style food. We're going to continue with that. Obviously, it's the head chef's favourite thing to do. We're going to add in a little bit of Spanish and North African, some Greek dishes. So it's going to be more Mediterranean based, the menu. Along with that, we will plan the beer list and the cocktail list around that as well. Not so much the wines, but yes, so I can say the cocktails will have a big Mediterranean feel too as well.
I mean, you mentioned wines. The Old Bridge is famous for its wine cellar. Is there going to be a sort of influence of that on
there is, yes. So the director of both premises is a master of wine. John Hoskins, he chooses the wine list at the Old Bridge Hotel, and we'll also be doing it here, so you can see some similar occurrences between both menus. It's not going to be as big a list. It'll be carefully selected to match the food in what we're trying to do here.
Well, could you tell us, just give us a flavour of the menu? Are there any particular things which are popular or you're particularly pleased with?
So as a starter, something that I've noticed has gone out really well in the first couple of weeks is the salad of slow-cooked octopus. A lot of people are afraid to try octopus when they first see it. Obviously, we try and recommend it and show them that it's very similar to squid in a way, just much more flavour. So we had a menu tasting with all the staff, and I think it was a crowd pleaser there. Everyone seemed to enjoy that. So we didn't get much of it, so we have to keep pressuring the chef to do us another one. So that one goes down really well, and people always do comment on the flavour of the food, which is what we're really trying to go for here.
And what about on the mains?
Spatchcook poussin. So we see that come out very often. Char grill it and then roast it in the oven. It goes down really well because it's a real summery dish, which we've got on at the moment. Comes with the tzatziki and then olive oil roast potatoes rather than a big sticky gravy dish that you might expect to find somewhere else.
Yeah.
We've done it as a real summer theme, so obviously in the winter months you can expect that to change, but at the moment with the weather being nice, but it's flying out at the moment, so that's good.
What about desserts? Have you tried the desserts as well?
I have. I'm not a massive fan of desserts. I'm more of a starter man than a dessert man, but we have an amazing chocolate nemesis on at the moment, which chocolate lovers love.
Yeah, and you've got cheeses, I guess.
Yes, so cheese board is always desirable. Got some lovely port to go with that as well, some vintage port.
And have you got a reasonable selection of dessert wines to have?
Dessert wines, yet. So I think at the moment, I think there's 4 dessert wines on the list. But again, as we grow as a business, I think we'll be expanding that.
Yeah, yes. And there's a few changes to the buildings going on, I can see.
Yes, that's about. So during the month of September, we'll be rebuilding the conservative restaurant. We'll then be moving the focus through to the bar area and updating that and bringing that back to life, just giving it some colour and a fresh feel. I've already started to change the lighting, so having a day setting and a night setting, just to adapt to the change of the mood and the setting, really. We've focused on outside a little bit first, obviously introducing some nice long wooden tables with some umbrellas so people can actually sit out and enjoy the sun and the shade if some people want to. We've got, obviously we serve our full menu outside, So it's a good chance for people to come out, sit outside, enjoy the new furniture, enjoy the sunshine, and
brilliant.
Have something to eat.
And what times are you open from?
So on a Sunday we are just open for lunch, so 12 till 2:30 we take orders. Monday to Thursday we take orders 12 until 2:15, and then 6 until 9. And then on a Friday and Saturday, 12 until 2:30, and 6 until 9:30.
Brilliant. So, okay. Well, thanks very much, James.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks. And that was James McFarlane from the Three Horseshoes in Madingley. And we've now got their September menu, and there are some very enticing dishes on it. Starters include slow-cooked pork cheek in Pedro Jimenez sherry with cauliflower puree and morcilla breadcrumbs. And there's also caponata, a Sicilian dish with lots of aubergines. And mains include roast quail with fig bruschetta and North African beans and green wheat salad. It sounds marvellous.
Mandy Morton here to invite you into Mandy's Garden Shed this Saturday lunchtime. We'll be on the allotment, answering your gardening questions and peering over the hedge into a celebrity's garden. That's Saturday from 1 till 2. Community radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
Alex Collis is involved in several community food projects, including Food Cycle, an initiative that takes donated and surplus food from local outlets to turn it into a three-course meal for the community. She also works at the Cambridge Food Bank and the Cambridge Calais Refugee Action Group. Now, along with her business partner Zoe Loughlin, they've begun a new project called Whoop Soup. The W in Whoop stands for wonky, and Whoop Soup's tagline is Liberating Wonky Veg. Roughly a third of all food produced is still going to waste, so here's Alex and Zoe to tell us more.
How long have we known each other now? About
4 years?
4 years, yeah, we met at Food Cycle.
Yeah, the more we've worked together in the area, the more we've seen just how many gaps there are right along the food chain. So from the moment the crops get grown in the field and you get rejects that don't make it because they aren't the right shape and size, and then right across the supply chain, there's so much waste that occurs. So what we've tried to do is to come up with a model that helps to plug some of those gaps and put some of that food to good use.
Yeah, and is responsive to that as well. So we do different flavours each week, and we use what our suppliers have spare. We have a stock of recipes that we'll use, but it varies from week to week, which is part of the fun. A bit too much fun sometimes.
Whoop Soup.
Whoop Soup.
Whoop on the shelves in Cambridge.
Yes, it's on sale from this morning. We produce the soup on Mondays. Yeah. We deliver on Tuesday mornings, and it goes on the shelf on Tuesdays.
Yeah. You're the head of kitchen.
I usually decide the flavours. Zoe will veto stuff. We have terrible controversies over citrus, well, orange in soup, don't we? I like
actually,
it.
Actually, I feel like we're meeting in the middle already with that and with salt as well. We're pretty joined up now.
Yeah.
We can't all agree on everything.
No. I am not a fan of carrots at all. So thinking up recipes for carrot soup has been quite a challenge. But we make a very nice sort of smoky roast carrot, butternut squash and lentil soup, lots of paprika. But I think probably both our favourites is the roasted cauliflower one. We get very, very excited whenever we get cauliflowers in our food pickups. Roasted cauliflower with fennel seeds, and if we get it, a bit of fennel as well. And some sort of white bean is lovely. Oh, it's
really
good.
Winning combination.
And on sale this week, actually.
It is. You can buy that.
Yes.
This week in Emmaus and in the Radmore Farm Shop. Just to add a really nice thing about our soups, we're only using vegetables. They're all vegetable-based. And they're such beautiful, vibrant colours. And actually, now we've been packaging it, our packaging is mainly see-through. And that really shows.
Especially the beetroot one.
Yeah, and the carrots. I know you don't like carrots, but the beetroot is so pinky purple, and the carrot soup's just packed with that lovely deep orangey colour. And this food was going to be discarded. Nothing wrong with it. And
absolutely nothing wrong with it at all.
It just looks stunning on the shelves, yeah.
Food's wasted for a whole load of different reasons. We know a lot less about food waste at manufacturing and retail. And actually, by the time food gets as far down the supply chain as a retail outlet, it's kind of almost a bit late. There's a lot of work to be done there, but there's a lot more work to be done further up at farm level, I think. Is that right, Zoe?
Yeah, absolutely. At farm level, there's probably more food waste than is currently being recorded. There are very, very stringent cosmetic standards which are placed on our veg. So carrots go through this really strict process of being graded, and if they aren't quite the right shape or size or colour, then they don't make the grade. Some of these will go to animal feed, but not all of them. A lot of them do get wasted. And you also have examples where there just isn't the market for something. So a farmer may have grown a field of leeks or onions or potatoes, and there's just too much of it about. It's not worth their while to harvest it, and therefore it just gets ploughed straight back into the field. We're working with people across the supply chain. We're building up links with farmers so we can help them out. And I think it's important to say it's really key to our model that we pay something. We're not expecting to get produce for free, quite the opposite. We want to pay because there's value in it, and that's part of the problem, that this produce isn't valued.
It happens a lot. I walk to Ely quite often from Cambridge, and there are lots of potato fields there, and there is a way to Ely that you cut through this potato field, and quite often you walk through it and it is the smell of potatoes rotting because they just haven't been picked, a whole massive field of them. It's quite potent.
Yeah,
and that's happening all over the country, not just here.
Slowly but surely, we're really starting to change things. You're seeing a big change in the networks that enable this food to be put to good use. I think we're at the beginning of a very exciting journey to change things.
Yeah.
Eventually, we are looking to expand. So when we get opportunities to take dairy, sometimes you get surplus cheese and dairy products where it's just a case of oversupply. And then further down the line, we would like to look into working with butchers to take chicken bones and beef bones, not out of date in any way, they just don't get sold, and using them as a stock. At the moment, just because of manufacturing guidelines, we're sticking with the veggie stuff for the time being. But that's the thing, logistically, using surplus, there's actually a very high failure rate of people setting up enterprises that use surplus. For a lot of people, it's a bit of an afterthought. They like want to do this thing, food waste is a really big problem, why don't we use waste? And actually, the logistics of just getting hold of it and the financial implication for that in terms of time and travel is massive, to the point that it would be far cheaper and easier just to buy it from a wholesaler. It's logistics, all about the logistics. Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't go into that. They have great intentions. It's a bit like being a pub landlord, which has a really high failure rate. But I think quite a lot of people go into it thinking, I'd love to run a pub because they've drunk in those pubs and like pub life. And it's not like that. It's not what you see. It's all the legwork behind it.
Incredibly difficult job.
Yeah, hugely difficult
job. Couldn't pay me enough to do it.
Yeah.
You really couldn't.
But for a lot of people, it's a sort of dream job, and if they find themselves in a position with cash to do it. But yeah, I think we come at it with a level head.
A more realistic idea of how it works,
yeah.
And the potential limitations.
The other really important part of our model, we're a social enterprise, we're registered as a community interest company, and we are not-for-profit. Any profits that we do generate through WOOP will be put back into supporting local initiatives that tackle either food waste or food poverty.
Or both.
Or both. And that's such an important element of what we're doing, because it's brilliant when surplus can be used directly by charities to feed people. The reality is a lot of charities are already at kind of full capacity in terms of using surplus, or they're not able to build it into their model. There's more surplus than charities can use alone. We're not taking away any surplus that could otherwise be used from charities. If it ever got to that point, then we'd gracefully stand down. So for us, being able to generate money back to charities that can then tackle the root cause of the problem, because it's right to link food poverty and food waste, because it's absurd that the two exist alongside at such huge levels, but one is not the cause of the other and one is not the cure of the other. Diverting
sort of parallel
surplus
problems,
yeah,
aren't they?
Diverting surplus food is not going to solve food poverty, and neither is having all this food waste causing food poverty. So we're hoping to kind of generate that money that will actually help get to the root cause of these problems.
It's one of our most wasted foods. There's an element of, I think, deliberate overproduction by supermarkets. I know the Real Junk Food Project has done a lot of work recently on bread overproduction. They're calling it We Need to Talk About Bread. It's their sort of most recent campaign, but I forget the exact number, how many slices a day, but we're talking millions. Millions a day.
It's one thing when you do go to retail outlets to do food pickups, you can always guarantee that not only will there be bread, but you will have a selection of bread. So you can go to do a charity collection for, say, Food Cycle and be quite choosy about the bread that they're chucking out, which is just absurd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Part of what we've done with Woot is come up with a model where we have the potential to make a big impact. We're starting really small, just looking at Cambridge, producing on a very small scale, but we could make it bigger, we could scale it up, and therefore we can have a bigger impact, and including bread in that is really important. So yeah, we will be doing croutons or woutons.
But yeah, Zoe's quite right. Starting producing locally and on a small scale means we can make sure we get it right before scaling up to address what is a, you know, really big issue.
It's also really lovely to see something like this happening in Cambridge. Cambridge is a city where there's so much social activity, where, you know, you've got Food Cycle, you've got loads of great charities that are doing a lot of good stuff around food waste. There aren't any social enterprises quite like this in Cambridge yet, so, you know, we're happy to be able to bring that to the Cambridge scene. You can register your office, and so long as a few people are interested, we can come along and do a weekly delivery. So it means you'll have a packet of soup which will last the week. It's quite handy to have something at your desk.
Yes, when people are back from their holidays.
Yeah.
This might just be me, but I love croutons. I could just eat them like crisps.
So you didn't notice me sneaking handfuls.
No, you didn't.
Oh,
we share this problem, Alex.
Yeah, we do.
We're going to have to watch our production lines.
Maybe somebody else will have to make the woutons.
And that was Alex Collis and Zoe Loughlin talking about Woop Soup. And as per their last comment, they also make croutons to accompany their soups, cunningly named woutons, because huge quantities of bread are wasted every day. So they put them to good use. And you can buy Woop Soup at the Radmore Farm Shop on Chesterton Road and via Cofco, the Cambridge Organic Food Company. Their website is woopsoup.org.uk, and you can follow them via Twitter at woopsoup, or if you fancy emailing them, hello@woopsoup.org.uk. And what a year it's been for growing your own wonky fruits and vegetables. A lot of rain earlier on, and now long sunny days. But there have been problems, and one was potato blight. I caught up with Dave Fox at Trumpington Allotments, who was in the process of digging up some potatoes.
So here we're digging some potatoes, as a main crop, potatoes. And if you remember a few months ago we talked about the impact of blight, which struck quite early this year. That's a disease that affects the potatoes and the tomatoes. And I trimmed some of the leaves off, let the rest of the plants grow strongly in the hope of getting a crop. And this crop is actually really good. That's partly because this variety is called Sharpo, Hungarian derivative variety, and it's renowned as being blight resistant. So it didn't really get too much blight at all on the leaves. And we're getting these lovely big tubers. That's a really good spud there. And so that's one big one. See how many one plant's got. One, two, okay. So three big ones and
yeah, there's
several small ones. But there's another. In a year when we might have had no potatoes at all, this is a good result. We saw one with scab. This one's just been nibbled probably by slugs on the surface. So that's not great either. But that's okay. It's going to be fine to eat. Yeah. It's just that it's not going to store very well, obviously, because the skin's been compromised. So what I do is, as I harvest them, I sort of take out ones to use soon and ones to go into store. So damaged ones, just use them soon, because you don't want them rotting in a bag with all the with all the good ones, of course.
And how long will they store for?
If you get them, put them in store when they're dry, and keep them in the dark so they don't go green. Then they should store until maybe January, if the mice don't get in, of course. Depending on whether my cat's doing his job or not. Oh, talking of pests, let's just inspect my neighbour's sweet corn. What do we see here, Alan? We see a patch of real good, strong, tall sweet corn plants that did have lots of nice cobs on them, and it's devastation. Maybe 30% of the stems are lying on the ground. All the big cobs have gone. Quite a lot of the stems are broken, and there are some chewed cobs lying on the ground. And this is badgers. They've affected most of the patches of sweet corn on site, 17 out of 23. I did a little count the other day. The reason we know it's badgers rather than muntjac, which are the other suspects, is that one of our members set up an infrared camera trap, and we got a little video of the badger actually nicking a cob of corn and running off with it. I think probably perhaps the best method would be to create a wall or a barrier or something around the sweet corn crop. I've not done that. It's quite a lot of effort. And, of course, that would mean that it's a barrier to you when harvesting and watering as well. So there's another little idea someone suggested, which is to get a plastic bottle, cut the bottom off, and then just put it on top of the cobs as they start to mature.
Yes.
And leave it like that. And I've tried that with three of mine, and they haven't been taken so far. Leaving the hole in the bottle at the top so as it doesn't get too... damp in there.
Yes.
Don't we don't want the cob to go mouldy. Yeah, well, I mean, it's not great protection, but perhaps it will just confuse the badger.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps we need to sort of outwit them rather than building impregnable barriers.
And presumably they're attracted by the smell, are they?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, smell's their strongest sense.
Right. So I wonder if by putting that over it, it sort of stops the smell
maybe.
Travelling.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Once they've found the corn, I'm sure they don't forget where it is. So anyway, I sat out here one night for about an hour around midnight, and sure enough, I heard the badgers rustling in the corn over the far corner, and then they came and did Tim's next door to me, and then they came and did mine, and then they went and did Pete's. Because it was a still night, it was when the meteor shower was on as well, and I could hear the badgers moving around sight. The sound of a badger rustling in the sweet corn leaves is quite unmistakable. And it's the first time I've ever seen a live one, so that was a real treat.
I think
we still love them on balance.
There weren't a lot of meteors, were there?
No, so it was cloudy. I did see something nice, though.
Yeah,
I'll take that off, actually. Oh, yeah, so I was just going to say that I try to take these bottles off during the day because I don't want the cobs getting sweaty and mouldy in there, so... I think protecting the whole crop like that would be quite a hassle, but I'm just trying to see whether it works or not with the bottles.
Just a quick reminder, Dave. Last year you talked about bolotti beans and when to gather them.
Oh, yes.
And could you just give us a quick reminder of when they should be gathered?
Yes. So we're looking at my neighbour's bolotti beans. So that's a tall climbing bean. They put canes up to give them something to grip on. And the pods are, 10 to 15 centimetres long. Beautiful... a red colour on a sort of greeny cream background.
They're very attractive, actually.
They're gorgeous, aren't they? Yeah. And the pods are swelling with maybe up to 8 beans in each pod, and hopefully they'll get some water at this stage, and then maybe a few dry weeks for them to dry off and become ready to harvest and store. So they'll keep over winter, and they keep for several years, and so one could use them.
So that's when they're ready, when they're actually dried.
Well, you could eat them now as a green bean, just cook it straight away, but I like to use most of them as a stored bean. It's just a really good way of, as a natural way of preserving food, because we're in the height of the harvest now, and part of the challenge is to preserve some of that for the hard times ahead in the winter. And the lovely thing about bolotti beans is the colour change over the season. They start off green, and this red colour develops, and by the time they're dried and really, really ready to store, the pods will be blue speckled on cream or cream speckled on blue. Mm. So they're looking pretty good at the moment.
This one is becoming
blue. That's interesting. That's towards the bottom of the plant, suggesting that it was probably one of the earlier pods to develop, and it's now a darker red, and that's turning towards blue.
Mm.
So that's right. And you can feel the difference. Actually, you can feel that it's drier. You can feel the individual beans inside.
Yeah.
So a few weeks off, 2 weeks off maybe, to harvest. So the other crop that's badly affected by the blight is tomatoes, and Here I had that.
But not yours.
Well, yeah, I don't know where they are, because you can see here's a leaf, which I can take off, which has got some brown sections almost sort of dissolved. And that's the blight that's dried out now, because it's been hot and sunny for the last day or two, and long may that continue. Now we're in the harvest time. Oh, here's a fruit which is looking really blackened, yes, and misshapen. So that one's, yes, blighted. However, there are four or five really good looking ripening tomatoes on there. You can see the stem is darkened. So what we're seeing here is a plant that's partly affected, but not too bad. So I suggest it was worth thinning them out and taking out the worst of the affected plants to let a bit of air through, and I've still got some crop. I think that if I'd have left the whole crop of tomatoes densely planted in that wet weather, I think the disease might have raced through the lot and I wouldn't have had any tomatoes at all. Maybe, you never know. And then over here we have another crop of... I just put this blighted material in the bag. Get rid of it. Here we've got a crop of Red Alert tomatoes. That's the variety, Red Alert. And that's an early tomato. And these have developed pretty well. And again, I took out some of these, but maybe about a third of them, and left the rest.
Yes, they're fantastic.
Rest.
Yeah.
Can we just taste these?
Are they tasty ones?
Yeah. Sweet in the sun. Mm. Lovely. Quite a thick skin, but that's quite good.
I don't mind that.
Mm. Yeah, I love Red Alert. Ah, they're just starting to split. So that means I must pick today. Maybe make a sauce quickly using the ones that have split and are damaged, and the rest of them will probably last a couple of weeks, kept in cool conditions in the kitchen. Because, as I say, they've got quite a thick skin, so if they're undamaged, they're good.
Well, it's lovely growing weather, Dave, but is it still possible to sow things and harvest them this year?
So we're in early September, and that means it's probably 5 weeks or so until the likelihood of the first frost, when things really, really turn, plants stop growing very much. But we've still got time for fast-growing crops like radish. So get some radish seed in now. If you've got a little bit of ground, or you've harvested a previous crop, or even in a pot or something, just throw a few radish seed in. Rocket grows, here's some rocket. This grows really quickly as well. So, you know, you can do some work now, and in a month's time be harvesting fresh salad ingredients. And rocket is easy peasy to grow, and grows itself, especially when the weather's perhaps a little bit cooler and it doesn't want to race off and make seed. You see the prices that the supermarkets charge for a bag of this. Well worth growing your own rocket. And then we're thinking a bit further ahead. It's also a good time to get in some crops which are going to get established in the last month or so of a reasonably warm weather, and then knuckle down and tough it out through the winter, and then come on to produce the earlier crops next year. So a couple of examples of that would be spring cabbage, which we can plant. There's a couple here, so I've grown these from seed, and then planted the seedlings out after four weeks or so, and I've got some other rows of tiny seedlings. See these ones coming up here with just the first pairs of leaves. So that they're a little bit late, but hopefully I'll have some I can plant out and get a crop next year. And another thing we can put in, going through the seed packets, is spring onions. There's a selection of the White Lisbon spring onion variety called White Lisbon Winter Hardy. And with any luck, if they get to a reasonable size in before the frosts come, then they'll be ready to eat rather earlier than a spring sown crop of onions would be. So put them in over here.
Well, thanks to Dave Fox for that good growing advice. And on to the Cambridge food and drink news now. Let's begin with jobs. Don Pasquale's in Cambridge Market Square is looking for experienced waiting staff, and so is the Copper Kettle in King's Parade. A couple of events which are taking place at this very moment. The first is at Mitcham's Corner in the Barclays Bank car park. There's music, entertainers and food that includes Rock of Virtue's Caribbean food, Ali's Baltic Bakes, Fired Up Pizza, Jack's Gelato, Dutch Bikes Poffertjes and Go-Go Gogi Gooey, and that's on until 6 o'clock today. And also open right now is Calverley's Brewery, just along the road from us in Hooper Street. Their beers are available, and guest street food provider this afternoon is Steak and Honour, and that's until 3. And from 6 till 9 tonight, it's Pulmi Sherry. Tomorrow, it's the Mill Road Feast with 20 food vendors, including some newcomers to Mill Road. Bunny Chow with South African street food, George's Cakes with cakes, brownies and quiches, and Azahar Food Van with Spanish food. In addition, Waterland Organics, who featured on the last edition of Flavour, will be selling their organic vegetables. And with a new term beginning, there's an opportunity to do some learning. At the Cambridge Cookery School next Saturday from 10 till 2 p.m, classic sauces including mayonnaise, hollandaise, pesto and bolognese. And next Sunday, there's a sourdough bread class. And from the 16th to the 18th of September, a culinary trip to Stockholm. Details of all these and a lot more can be found on the Cambridge Cookery School website. But if it's wine you want to learn about, there are a couple of courses coming up soon at Cambridge Wine Merchants in Cherry Hinton Road. On the 7th of September, a wine tasting tour of Spain takes you on a guided tour of the Spanish wine regions. It starts at 7:30, tickets are £22.50. And on the 13th of September, New Zealand wine tasting. That's 7 for 7:30 and is £20 including nibbles. Details of how to get the tickets are on the Cambridge Wine Society website. And on the 17th and 18th of September, a reminder that the Queen's Head in Newton has a foodie weekend. And that's all we have time for. This programme will be podcast early next week. Thanks very much for listening, and thanks very much for Toby Miller for doing the engineering today. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Bye.